presentation is open for questions, please.
Everybody's attempts at writing algorithms by just saying what maximum dose you think is safe of EPO, and secondly, is there a maximum amount of iron that you think is safe for a patient within, say, 6 months or a year?
So the maximum dose of EPO, I think, needs to be that those data need to be generated from animal models. And I haven't done it. I don't have the ability to do it. But we really need to understand better on a basic science and then a translational level. I can't give you a maximum dose for a patient because if you increase your... Let's say for the sake of argument that higher hemoglobin is better. If you increase EPO a little bit and you get a little bit of a bump, or you get a lot of bump in hemoglobin, how does the positiveness of the hemoglobin squelch the negativeness of the higher dose? I think it depends on the response. So I'd like to not give a number, but actually say, if you don't get a response, then come back down. Because I think that based on all of the information that we have, that's about, I think, as specific as someone can be. There have been a number of people that I've spoken with that have taken those people that haven't gotten to that basement of 10 and cut back on their EPO slowly until they see a decrement in their hemoglobin, which is very interesting. And they found that, anecdotally, that there's a lot of excess that we're doing, and you know that they don't get much movement on the hemoglobin in like the first 20 or 30% of the dose. So I can't be very specific, and I'm glad. Let's have a conversation about this, because maybe we'll light a light bulb in each other.
Yes, so we've tried to build into our algorithm that if a patient's been at the maximum 28,000 for a number of months and stayed below 10, then we decrease it by 10%.
Love it.
If it doesn't get worse, we decrease it again, decrease it again. But is it a mistake to have gone all the way up to 28,000?
No, I don't think so. So first of all, I'd like to encourage you to publish those data. And I think Kidney International would be very interested in them. But I don't think that that's too high a dose, because I don't think that we know what the dose is. You're really asking the question. In the inflection point that we saw in Choir was around 12,000 a week. Oh my gosh, you know, you can't do that in dialysis patients. That's CKD patients. So I can't tell you what it is in dialysis patients, and I think that it would be really appropriate to define the dose response curve, because that's the low-lying fruit. The dose that you're giving that you're not getting a response to is the most dangerous dose.
Next question, please.
I actually have a comment. In September 2010, a secondary analysis of the trial was done by the treat group themselves. And what they did was they divided patients into groups depending on their initial response to the first initial two doses of Ranesp. And they showed that the patients who had a poor initial response, are they going to do worse with no matter how much EPO they get? Most likely they got a higher dose of EPO later on because they had an initial response. So you just showed us that the patient who got a higher EPO dose did worse. The question that we should answer right now is this really the higher EPO dose? Are we talking about higher EPO side effects from the higher dose, or there is something about the pathophysiology of anemia? Maybe a higher hepcidin level, or I don't know what exactly is going on in these patients who are having an initial poor response to EPO that is making their nephrologists give them a higher dose of EPO and causing more side effects.
So I thank you so much for bringing up that paper, because I didn't include it here, but it's incredibly relevant and it does fit in entirely with what we're talking about. Bearing in mind, remembering, of course, that that's a randomized trial, so to wonder if maybe there were sicker patients in the group that got active drug is, again, saying that randomization failed. And if we say that, then we'd have to say that randomization failed in Choir, in treat and in the normalization of hematocrit. And, you know, maybe in 1998 we could say that, but I think based on all the data that we have to say that at least in one of those studies, randomization gave us two equal groups. So with that, I'd like to put the focus more on what you talked about as your first hypothesis. There's something about a direct effect of the drug. And when I read that paper, the thing I found most fascinating was not so much that the hyporesponders did worse, but that the responders didn't do any different from placebo. And that's the other thing that sort of jumped out at me, that we've got two groups here that randomization should have given us to be absolutely equal. And with 4,000 patients, wow, you can't beat the power there. And then we've taken the placebo group, and they've got a certain degree of events. And then the hyporesponders and the responders, and wow, there was no difference here with people that responded with active drug, but it was all driven by the hyporesponders. So if it were, you know, maybe the hematocrits, the direct effect of hemoglobin, I would have expected the responders to have a better outcome. But they didn't. It was all negative. You could either, you know, do the same or you could do worse if you got a whole lot of drug. So just be glad you're not married to me, because you can't argue with me. I'm convinced that it is really about dose until someone proves to me that it's not. But, you know, that's what conversation is about, and we're all interpreting. But I'm glad that you brought that up, because if people haven't read it, they should. Yes, sir.
Hi. We've got data now through RRI that explains this whole thing. Unfortunately, I can't share it with you right now. However, if you come back next year, we will present this data, and it will clear up this whole issue, I promise you.
That's fabulous. So can you tell us what you can say and where you will say it?
I'll talk to you privately about that.
Oh, I'm salivating.
I wanted to make the point. A patient who's on dialysis on a low dose of EPO with an achieved hemoglobin of 9.5 or even 9, in my view, is at no increased risk of any bad outcomes because of that number. Yet, because we have these guidelines, they have now been turned into a mandate from the feds, and now we have to get them to 10 or we're going to face a financial penalty. I think this is insanity.
It is, and that's the other thing that I'd like to encourage everyone that ever writes editorials, because, you know, as a nephrology group, we have set best practices and talked about this internally, and this came out through the KDOQI guidelines in the multiple iterations, the multiple chapters, the multiple years, and they're written from clinicians to clinicians as your goal for what you can control in your patient that is sitting in front of you. But the leap, which you just identified, is one that I get very tachycardic about myself, that it has been taken by third-party payers and translated verbatim, where our goal for what we can control in one patient is now mandated that we have to do this across 100% or you're a bad nephrologist. And that's just preposterous.
Just yes, to follow up on the postdoc analysis of the normal hemoglobin trial, shouldn't the best surrogate here is what is the high dose necessary to correct platelet dysfunction of uremia rather than a high hemoglobin level? And correlates are there in terms of increased thrombocytosis and platelet dysfunction. And I think that makes more sense to go up on what are the upper limits of danger.
I love that. I think to take a step back from your one suggestion and just sort of put it into a bigger context, I think that what we need to figure out is how not to hurt patients with our agents, and then focus on those outcomes that might be ones that are within our ability to change. So platelet function is one of them. Physical functioning, quality of life is another. The functional outcomes that Dr. Painter went on so beautifully about are another. And I think that we need to refocus what the real outcomes are, because it's clear that we're not going to keep people on this earth longer by adding more erythropoietin, epoetin alpha, et cetera. I mean, we just have to figure out how not to hurt people with these drugs. But we do need to figure out how to benefit them. And maybe quality of life, you know, in measured in a different way, you know, is the way we should look at. And adding platelet to that list is perfect. I think that's a brilliant suggestion.
Yeah, I apologize. I don't think we have time for any more questions. We are definitely have to keep close to our clock.